All right, matinee show.
Yeah, we saw some pretty good ones. This should be a pretty good show.
Yeah, did a Shudder, did a Netflix, and did a theater.
Which ones are we covering today?
We are doing Bliss.
Yeah.
What Did Jack Do?
Yeah.
And the Rhythm Section.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So the first one we're going to talk about is Bliss. Now, this actually came out, I believe, in October of 2019.
Yeah.
But it just now hit Shudder. So I know it's like a little bit older than usually we would do for this show, but I'm just getting around to seeing it because Shudder just added it. So we're going to talk about that one. Now, this movie is... Okay. This is what would happen if you mixed... You took the movie Mandy, some Dario Argento... The old movie The Thirst, I think it was called, with Lily Taylor about the vampire drug addict thing. If you took those three movies and put them in a blender and blended them all together and then like put some punk rock on top of it.
Yeah.
That's kind of what this would be like. So how you feel about that is how you're going to feel about this movie. Because I will say I really dug this movie, but I can see how one, it's very style over substance. I mean, it's a very simple story. It's basically about this woman named Desi, and she's an artist, and she's kind of like having a shitty like time in her career. Like she's kind of lost her mojo. She's working on this one painting and she's not getting any inspiration for it. Her agent's going to drop her because she's behind like on this painting that she's supposed to deliver to the gallery. And she spent all her advance and all this other kind of shit. So she decides that she's going to go to her dealer. Oh, and also her landlord is bothering her about the rent. Like, she hadn't paid the rent in a couple months, and he's going to kick her out. So she just decides, fuck it, and she's going to go to her dealer and buy some drugs. So now her dealer has this really cool new drug called Bliss, which, what did he say it was? It was a combination of cocaine and something else. I can't remember what it was.
Yeah,
but it was basically ketamine? Like... Maybe it was that. I can't remember offhand, but it was just like some supercharged like cocaine. And she like takes a sample of that and she's like, oh, yes, please. Mm. So she buys some off him. I don't know how much it is. Maybe not enough to like that she could have paid her rent check with it, but whatever. Yeah. And basically, as it goes on, at least you are led to believe that this drug, because she just keeps like taking it, man. And it does like cause her to get some inspiration for her painting, but it also causes her to blackout and maybe... murder people and start drinking blood and whatnot. So that's not good.
There's some she's having some threesomes.
There were some threesomes.
Yeah.
There is just all kind of fun shit in this. Yeah. So like I said, it's a very simple story in the sense that it is her, you know, getting like all into this drug and, you know, basically I don't know if I'd say turning into a vampire, but I guess sort of. It's sort of like a vampire movie, like I said.
Yeah.
It reminded me a lot of, like, The Thirst, that Lily Taylor movie that came out in the 90s or something. I don't remember when it was. It was a long time ago that I saw it. But it has, like, a veneer, like, pretty much the first half of the movie. This is not a super long movie. It's only 80, 85 minutes, something like that.
Well, it's hard to tell.
Yeah, it did seem kind of long. Just because I think, like I said, the story is very similar. So a lot of it is just kind of like a music video. Pretty much. I mean, the score is cool. There's like a lot of really good like post-punk death rock shit like that going on in it, which I liked.
You guys notice and I'm not saying anything, right?
Yeah, but it's like this is definitely, and I will say too, and I've heard some other reviewers say this, that how you feel about this movie is going to be how do you feel about the main character. Now, it's a good acting performance in the sense that you know people like this. Because she's kind of like, this is like the underbelly of LA. Pretty much the whole first half of the movie is spent in like scuzzy, like punk rock bars, drug dens. I'm not sure when it's set. She has a flip phone, so I'm thinking maybe late 90s? Early 2000s, something like that. It's hard to tell.
I think certain areas of California are frozen in time. I mean, I left there in 1981. Glad I never went back.
I just thought because of the phones, I thought
Carson.
I did not think that it was like set in the modern day. They don't really specify. It doesn't really matter, but it's like I did notice that she had a flip phone instead of like a modern cell phone. So it's like, hey, like Pookie is chomp. Please stop chewing on that. But yeah, so how you feel about this is going to be like, how do you feel about watching a bunch of not particularly likable characters?
Yeah, and they're not very interesting. If
hanging around, like having threesomes, getting high, getting drunk, like yelling at people, and shit like that. I didn't mind it,
like reality TV for me.
It was kind of. Yeah. So in a way, I can see how people.
We know
would be
people like
like
this. We kind of tend to avoid them.
I think most people do try to avoid them. So yeah,
you wave to them at the club. They're all right at the club. You don't want to go home with them.
Yeah, it's that kind of person. Yeah. So like the whole movie is full. I will say George Wendt from, you know, Norm from Cheers makes a cameo appearance in this as Desi's dad, uncle, somebody. I don't know. It's like somebody that hangs out like where she goes to get drugs. I'm not real sure what the relationship between all of these people are. So it's pretty much just kind of like, it was written and directed by a guy named Joe Begos, or Begos, I'm not really sure how to pronounce it. But you can tell that this is kind of like his homage to this kind of like scuzzy underground drug scene. And so a lot of the movie does revolve around. That's not a story-based kind of thing. You might not like a lot of the characters. It takes a while to get where it's going, because like I said, it doesn't have a lot of story. A lot of it's very visual. It's kind of like trippy visuals.
You hit it right on the head there. It violated my 10-minute rule. If I don't know what the movie is about, or if, you know what I mean, if I haven't been hooked in the first 10 minutes, I go ahead and tune out. It means I'm not going to like the rest of the movie. And that is fucking 99% accurate.
Yeah.
99% accurate. The only one that kind of pushed that boundary today, Rhythm Section, almost pushed that 10 minutes. Yeah. But
I forgave the movie
once it started rolling.
But, yeah.
This one was boring.
It is boring. Like, I liked it, but like I said, it's more like an experiential. Yeah. I saw another like reviewer call it experiential, in the sense that this is just something you're going to watch. Let the visuals and the music kind of wash over you. You don't really have to pay attention to the story particularly, because, you know, it's basically like, you know, she's painting this stuff.
It had the feeling of a made up as you go along slice of life movie.
It was kind of like that.
For too long. I'm like,
It gave me a little bit of that. What's that weird fucking movie that we watched from the 80s that's just about like the aliens that came down and wanted to do heroin, but it was just like mostly
Liquid Sky.
But
Liquid Sky was quite interesting.
Yeah. It gave me a little bit of that vibe.
Yeah.
The best
of the movies we're talking about along those lines would have been like that new Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. That's kind of like a slice of life movie, but every one of those characters is compelling.
Yeah.
And everything that Once Upon a Time in Hollywood did right, this movie did wrong.
Yeah. Thematically, it's kind of similar to The Devil's Candy, even though that was a really, really good movie. Look at Pookie. She's
biting. Are you biting?
She's like, I want to be on the show, damn it.
Yeah.
But in the sense that it's like, you know, an artist who's like, has inspiration and like has blackouts and paints like evil looking shit. There is like a lot of gore in this. There's like some, you know, there's nudity, there's that kind of thing. But like I said, this is going to be like a real divisive type of movie. I didn't mind it, but I probably wouldn't watch it again. Like I said, if you want kind of like, you know, more of like an artist possessed, like death metal type of movie, I would recommend The Devil's Candy, because that's a lot better and has like a lot more compelling characters. But, you know, if you have Shudder and you don't...
The movie looked good.
It's cool looking.
The movie looked good. It had good acting in it. I guess it was acting.
Yeah.
If that, you know, I believed the characters that I saw.
Yeah.
But I just thought it was kind of boring.
Like I said, I can see how it might have worked better as a short film.
Yeah.
Because, you know, after a while, it's like, yeah, the trippy visuals are cool and everything, but you're kind of like, like the drug is like messing her up and she's like starting to want to drink blood.
There's just not much there.
Yeah. So it's just kind of like it's expanded out to movie length. But like I said, if that sounds like something you'd be into, then, and if you have Shudder, then go ahead and check it out. All right, now the second one I want to talk about just kind of popped up on Netflix very recently. It's a short film. I was actually going to talk about another short film that was on Shudder called The Whistler, but then I decided to do this one instead, just because The Whistler is good. It's just that it wasn't anything like super mind-blowing or anything like that. And I was like, well, I've been asked to do What Would Jack Do? Because it's a 17-minute film
David Lynch. It's just so fucking weird. I don't even know if I understood it. I was laughing through the whole thing, though.
It was funny as shit.
It's a monkey talking about a chicken, a monkey trying to fuck a chicken, and then a dude judging him on it or something. And the monkey was singing, and it's black and white. It's fucking hilarious. And the monkey's serious.
Yeah.
It's like, you just gotta see it.
It's
Jenny can explain it better.
Yeah, it's like, seriously, this is, I mean, obviously, how you feel about David Lynch is going to, like, you know, really inform your, how you receive this.
It's ridiculous.
This one, it's kind of like concentrated David Lynch.
Yeah.
So it's like, if you don't want to sit, like, through the 3 hours of Inland Empire or anything like that, but you just want, like, a short, sharp shock of David Lynch weirdness, then this is what you need to do. Like I said, it's 17 minutes long. It was actually made a few years ago. It was made back in 2016 or 2017. And it premiered at a French film festival because the French fucking love David Lynch. So he's always doing, like, film shit over there. So it premiered over there, and then it finally just, like, dropped on Netflix in 2020, I believe on David Lynch's 75th birthday. So basically the plot, if you can call it that, David Lynch is playing, I assume, like, some kind of detective. And they're in what appears to be, like, a locked down train station, and he is interviewing a monkey about a murder that has taken place. And during the course of this very strange, non sequitur filled interview, it comes to light that the monkey, whose name is Jack Cruz, if you wondered, it even says in the
He's in a suit, in the he sings, he has a little human voice, he's got a human mouth. It's a charming monkey.
It is. He is very charming.
Yeah.
It comes to light that he killed, or he may have killed, somebody named Max. I don't know if Max is a human or another monkey, but apparently he killed him over a chicken that he's in love with that's named Tutotobon. That's the chicken's name.
Yeah, that's right.
So I immediately got Gonzo vibes, because you know how on The Muppets, like, Gonzo is always performing with all the chickens, and some people have speculated that he's kind of, like, into this one particular chicken whose name is Camilla or something like that. I can't remember what the chicken's name is. But so that made me laugh, like, the whole thing about, like, this little monkey.
And then the monkey breaks out into song. Does a musical number and everything. And it's, like, it's very, like, 20s. Their 30s, maybe.
Yeah, he tried to make it look like what I thought to myself, other than, like, I've kind of given up on trying to plumb the depths of David Lynch's imagination.
He's making
because
it up.
He's just like, well, the thing about David Lynch, and I might have talked about this some when I reviewed Mulholland Drive, it's like he's a very, he doesn't think too much about things. He's very, like, instinctual. So a lot of the stuff that he does, yes, he's making it up as he goes along, but because he is so, like, well-versed in narrative structure and film and things like that, a lot of times even the shit that he just kind of pulls out of his ass, like, ends up kind of making, like, a strange kind of sense.
Yeah.
So this one, I almost got the feeling that he wanted to make, because he's very into, like, deconstructing the tropes of a particular genre. Like he did on Twin Peaks, he wanted to take a soap opera and, like, it, you know, intersperse it with, like, surrealism, you know what I mean? So what he did with this one was he took, like, a lot of the tropes of, like, the noir genre, and it sounds like a lot of the lines of dialogue, because a lot of this interview that they are conducting between him and this monkey, it's like, it doesn't really gel in the sense that he's asking a question and sometimes what the monkey says doesn't seem to answer that question. So it almost seems like he took, like, a bunch of dialogue from old, like, Dashiell Hammett, like, books or movies or something like that, and then, like, he just kind of, like, chopped them up and, like, put them all in there. It does kind of make sense, but not really.
I think it was all just a bunch of one-liners. It was just impressionism.
Yeah, it's almost kind of like a deconstruction.
Yeah, it's like it actually was kind of like a weird satire or a weird postmodern reproduction of a scene.
I definitely do think that that's...
just to give a character's chance to pontificate and to perform. It was just fucking weird.
It was
LSD, like, might have helped.
You know what? And he made it, like, he aged it, like, to make it look old, like it came from back then as well.
Yeah.
And, like, the way it's shot is very much like an old noir film where it's just kind of, like, close up of this guy, close up of this guy. And it's, like, really high contrast. And it's, like, really cool. But it's, like... it's got, like, some kind of weird, like, unsettling kind of imagery. Like, I saw some people that reviewed it that said that they actually didn't know, like, ahead of time that the monkey was going to talk. Because, so he's like, David Lynch is here talking to the monkey, and then all of a sudden there's a close-up on the monkey, and the monkey starts talking, like, and his mouth moves. They did it, like, it looked like rotoscoping or something like that, just like they used to do with Clutch Cargo, except it looks a lot better.
Yeah.
So... watching, like, a little capuchin monkey, like, talking like a human is a little bit Yeah, and he has like a little suit on, and it's like hat. He's making little like serious expressions and shit like that.
Yeah.
So it's like unsettling, but also kind of like hilarious at the same time. So it's like,
it looks like the monkey is talking and singing.
It really does. And it's like, because
his eyes and everything.
Because I
he
guess
starts swaying sometimes.
Yeah, because yeah. I guess what he did was maybe he kind of like, you know, took the dialogue that he wanted to put in there and he put it in there like, so it would like match up with what the monkey was doing at the time.
Yeah.
Like if the monkey was looking over there or looking up or,
yeah.
or if he looked like wistful or something.
He was voicing over the monkey.
Yeah. It's like, I'm not sure. I heard that that was David Lynch, that was David Lynch's voice as well. Although I couldn't quite tell if it was, like, you know, he would like kind of disguise it. Cause it sounded kind of raspy, but it's just like, and the one scene where like they show the chicken running and it's like, doesn't really look like, it looks like, kind of like a weird surreal, like it's too fast or some frames are missing or something like that. It's like really, really strange looking where you see like two Totobon like running through the thing. But it's just like, as I said, if you're into surrealism, if you're into David Lynch, I laughed my ass off at this shit. I just thought it was funny as hell.
Yeah.
It's like, I wish he would make another full length movie because I don't know how like you guys, I mean, Mulholland Drive is still probably my favorite, but it's like, I loved Inland Empire. I loved all fucking 3.5 hours of that or however long it was. That was like one of the creepiest movies I ever saw. But this one, less creepy, more funny, although it did make me want to watch Eraserhead again.
Yeah.
It gave me an Eraserhead-y kind of vibe.
Yeah, it's not long. This review is probably longer than a damn movie. But
yeah, is it? No, it's not.
you can just go ahead and watch it and just be entertained. It probably means something, but it probably just means something to him.
Yeah, you know? Probably.
But it's
yeah, it's only 17 minutes. Yeah. It's on Netflix. It's like, if you like David Lynch, it's just, it's funny. It's like weird. Yeah. It doesn't make a lot of sense. And if you liked Eraserhead or anything like that, then you should definitely go check it out. Because that is like, it really gave me an Eraserhead vibe. And I was like, man, I need to watch Eraserhead again. That was what it reminded me of. Also, I want to watch this again because that monkey is like fucking adorable.
Yeah.
Monkey fucking a chicken.
Yeah, that's what he was getting to.
Well, yeah, that's kind of it was a love triangle between a monkey, a chicken, and a murder victim
who
may or may not be a different animal.
I think it was just made up. I think it was just some stuff that was just kind of made up on the spot, and it worked out.
Yeah, it
did.
But yeah, on Netflix. All right, third new movie. We saw this in the theater. Someone actually asked us to go see this one, so we did actually go. Because we'd only see the trailer a couple times. This is the Rhythm Section.
Yeah, it's made by the same people who make the 007, you know, the
James Yeah, the Johnson. Producer
Broccoli,
is like, yeah, because she's,
Broccoli.
Well, I think Cubby Broccoli used to be have the thing, but I think he died, so maybe that's, she's his widow, I can't remember how it goes.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, what, okay, the weird thing about this is that Like I said, I don't read reviews or anything like that before I go see the movie. So I didn't know until after we saw the movie that apparently this was Paramount Pictures' worst wide opening weekend of all time. And they think that Paramount's going to lose $40 million on this movie.
Because of this movie?
Yeah. Which is strange because...
Wait, hold on, back up. What are you saying? You're saying this is Paramount's worst opening season?
Ever.
Ever? Well, that's because they're all, they look at what they make. It's not just Paramount's, all of them.
But it's like, it's weird to me
because
look at what they're making. It's not like this is some lost masterpiece or anything, but this is a perfectly watchable
No, this is a good movie, but they didn't really promote this too much. They promoted all kinds of other crap that nobody's going to see.
But it's just, yeah, it just seems strange to me that it's like that. I mean, you know, it's not like a super original premise. It's like, okay,
no.
So it's based on a novel by Mark Burnell, and he also wrote the screenplay. Now, it was directed by Reed Morano. I think she did the first few episodes of The Handmaid's Tale. So I don't know if this is her first movie direction or not, but it's basically about this woman named Stephanie, and her whole entire family is killed in a plane crash. And over the course of the movie, she kind of like goes through various things in order to like get revenge on the terrorists that caused the plane crash.
Now, check this out. All right. You can crystallize this down. When we watched it and then we walked out of it, I go, I see what they did. Okay. They wanted to make a spy movie like James Bond.
Yeah.
But not that same property. And what they did basically is they have La Femme Nikita, a character very much like Nikita from La Femme Nikita, working with another character that's very much like James Bond.
Yeah.
Like, but he's like out of MI6.
He's like an ex-MI6, played by Jude Law.
And what you end up with is you end up with like a group of ex-intelligence agents or ex-spies training agents to go after terrorists.
Yeah.
But then it's like a big cluster. Nobody knows who... There's a bunch of... You don't know who's a terrorist sometimes and who isn't. It's kind of... It has elements of a little bit of a murder mystery. Not really. It's a spy movie.
It's a spy thriller, movie. I guess you would call it.
Yeah, I liked it. I liked it a lot better than that... what was that other one? It's like the copy of La Femme Nikita made by the original...
By the same guy, Anna.
Anna, yeah. It was a lot better than Anna.
I liked it better than Anna as well. Yeah. Just because... I mean, Anna wasn't a bad movie either. It just seemed like, well, that guy already made La Femme Nikita, so why is he making it again?
Yeah, under a different name.
Yeah, this one is very similar to La Femme Nikita, but one thing that I kind of liked about it was that her character, who... I mean, her entire family dies in the ensuing 3 years, because this is 3 years previously, her whole family died in a car... plane crash, and she was actually supposed to be on the plane, but she didn't go like at the last minute.
She had like survivor's
guilt. So she has like survivor's guilt and stuff.
Yeah.
And then she, so she's kind of like on a downward spiral. She was a drug addict. She's a prostitute. So her life has kind of like gone into the shitter. And, she really only gets kind of redeemed by being approached by a journalist who's like, hey, the plane crash wasn't an accident, like everyone said. It was terrorism. It was a cover-up.
You may not want to spoil the whole movie.
Yeah, I'm not going to. But so that's kind of how she starts, you know, building up into, like, going after the people that were behind the plane crash. One thing that I did like about this that was maybe, I guess it's similar to La Femme Nikita, but it's different from James Bond in the sense that she is just a regular person. And, you know, at the beginning of it, you know, she's a drug addict. She can't fight. Yeah. She's out of shape.
Right.
You know what I mean? She can barely like run and shit like that. So they do kind of, I do like that they sort of address the fact that she's not really physically up for this. She's maybe not mentally up for this. It's more of like a realistic.
Well,
she's not, she doesn't turn into like this super person. You know what I mean?
But, you know, that spy did turn her into an agent, though. He did train her.
Yeah.
He didn't give her a whole lot of training, but it was enough to kind of get her through it. But everybody kind of fucks up everything in this, but nothing really goes according to plan.
Which I liked because that was like more realistic.
Right. And,
especially someone that had just had kind of that minimal training.
Yeah.
And she was just kind of going on like anger, really, is kind of what she was operating on.
You got Jude Law, he's playing kind of like a James Bond type character, but he's been kicked out.
Yeah.
But he's still operating.
Yeah.
It's weird, you know. But
on the freelance, I guess.
They're doing it for money.
Yeah, everyone's kind of like mercenary.
Yeah. And but it was a good flick. It was worth watching.
Yeah,
the only thing with it is that it pressed me, that 10-minute rule.
It takes a while to get going. It's
very slow starting, and when you first meet the girl, the woman, what was her name again? Fuck.
Stephanie,
yeah. When you first
played by Blake Lively.
She's not interesting, really, when you first meet her. And so it's like 10 minutes of mopiness.
Yeah.
And you're like, man, come on, what's this movie about? And what's funny is that when the spy gets a hold of her, played by Jude Law, you know, he kind of says, you know, he kind of says that, you know, there's really nothing to you.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't want to steal the movie star.
Yeah. And like I said, that was one thing that I liked, that it was more realistic, where he's like, well, why don't you just like play to your strengths? I'm not going to like teach you all this hand to hand combat and all this stuff. He's like, because you're not going to be that good at that.
Yeah. And one thing I did like is that he beats the shit out of her.
Yeah. I mean, he teaches her to shoot.
That's pretty realistic.
Right.
Yeah. That she wanted to learn how to fight. So he just beats the shit out of her.
Like I said, she's not, you know, and he does say the thing. He's like, you know, I've known women that were just as good as a man, but it's like, I don't think that you're one of those people. So let's kind of like play to your strengths rather than trying to turn you into, you know, basically like a superhero.
Right.
You
kind of ultimately find out that, you know, that they're playing for real.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and in the end, he doesn't really care if she dies or not.
Yeah, it is. Everyone's kind of like, which I guess could be a criticism leveled at the movie, is that it's really hard to get kind of like an emotional connection to any of the characters, because, I mean, as much as you feel bad for, you know, Blake Lively's character, Stephanie, because, you know, her whole entire family is dead. It's like her life has gone down the toilet. So you can feel bad, you know, on a human level, but she doesn't give you a lot. I mean, it's a good acting performance, but she's very stoic.
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't talk a lot about what she feels. She doesn't talk, you know what I mean? So she's very, like, keeps things very close to her vest. So in a way, it's kind of, like, hard to get in there.
Yeah.
Although I was, like, interested enough in her journey, like, to see what was going to happen. You know, and I got interested in, like, all the twists and turns, like you said, and I'm, like, a lot more patient than you are.
Yeah.
But even I was kind of, like, the beginning of it, I was kind of like, okay, yeah, we're going to get on with this going? Or what's good. You know, it's like, that, she's sad. I get it.
That first 15 minutes, you could have done that in about three.
Yeah. Like, I feel like that could have been, like, edited down a little bit. Just because it was unnecessary. Like, you can put yourself in the place of someone whose entire family has died in an instant that. So you don't really need to have, like, 10 minutes of a character just, like, wallowing in it and being miserable.
Right. One of the things I did like about it is that this movie was just not moralistic. They were all bad.
Pretty much,
She was the one that was the least bad.
Yeah.
But even she was pretty bad.
Yeah, everyone just kind of did.
Yeah, even there are no real good guys or bad guys.
This was like moral gray area, the movie.
It's not good versus evil. It's kind of like evil versus evil, which...
Evil versus slightly less evil.
Yeah. Which that's the way it really is, probably.
And that didn't bother me at all. So, like I said, it's not like... some people have criticized... some of the criticisms that I saw this movie, like, after I saw it, where some people thought that the music choices were kind of strange and kind of jarring.
Yeah, they were.
I mean, I always, like, have to give a shout. I love, like, that they used Velvet Underground in there. But it did seem a little weird. Some people thought the editing was a little weird, that it was very, like, choppy or...
Yeah, you know. they put stuff in there. They tried to make things kind of cool, hip, and lighthearted, I think, but with a retro feel to it at certain times.
Sort of like Atomic Blonde,
but it didn't really actually
work. It's a downer movie. This is kind of like a bummer sort of movie. It didn't really, I mean, yeah, I guess in some ways you could say, like, just the tone of it is just, it's very downbeat. So it did seem a little bit strange. Like, tonally, it seemed like a little bit jarring. Bother me that much.
There was some good spy shit in it. There was some good action. There was some good intrigue. Some shit blew up. People got killed. Sneaky tricks and shit.
Yeah.
Training.
Like I said, it's nothing you haven't seen before. It's very similar to La Femme Nikita.
Yeah. If you like La Femme Nikita and you like James Bond, you'd like it.
Yeah,
it's not as grand as Bond, of course.
No. I mean, it kind of does.
It's probably a fraction of that budget. You know?
It has a lot of locations.
Right.
But, you know, it goes, like, to Spain. It goes to London. It goes to Tangiers. It goes, like, all over the place. New York, I think they put
it. It doesn't have that same epic...
It doesn't have that, like, that glossy, scope,
that
wealthy.
It looks good, but it's just not as epic as a Bond film.
Yeah, it's kind of like a grittier,
right?
Like, you know, shitty gutter version, I guess. But it's like, so the person that Mark Burnell, who wrote this book, I guess he's written, like, a series. I'm not sure how many there are, but he's written, like, a series of novels about this character. So I guess this is, like, the first one, and then the rest of them, like, kind of, you know, her other contracts or whatever.
Yeah,
but I guess because this one did so badly that none of them are going to be made now.
How did this one do so badly? It's only been out for about a week, huh?
That's what I mean. Well, I guess they expected it to make, like, 20 or 30 million its first weekend, and it didn't. It made, like, 2 million.
Right.
So, like I said, this is, like, their lowest, like, wide opening, like, wide release.
And what,
like, ever, as far as I know, which is strange because it's not a terrible movie.
Right. And then in the DC universe, they're bracing for impact with Birds of Prey because the pre-sales on the tickets are terrible, evidently.
Well, like I said, I've liked, like, a lot of DC movies, but I didn't, like, all the Suicide Squad and that kind of stuff, that, like, really never interested me. Like, I know that, like, a lot of people... I know a lot of people didn't really like Suicide Squad. So, I mean, I saw the trailers for Birds of Prey, and I was kind of like, eh, you know. I'm not like, a big superhero or comic book movie person anyway. Like, I've liked some of them. I liked Shazam. I liked some other ones like that. But it's like, just...
Well, hey, man, they're ignoring the fans, and that's
It has to be kind of like a really, you know, a really amazing thing for me to want to go see it. Like, you know what I mean? It's... Even a lot of the Marvel movies, like, are good, but it's like I don't really remember a lot about them.
Yeah, you're like, that was like a ride at Disneyland. You don't remember it.
I mean, the best Marvel movie I've seen lately was Into the Spider-Verse.
That's right.
Which ruled.
That was a good one.
But you know what I mean?
And then the best superhero movie I've seen was actually lately was Shazam. I like Shazam.
Yeah. Or Joker, if you want to count that. But that's not real. I don't really count that as like, that's not like a...
Right.
I mean, technically it's a comic book movie, but not really.
Yeah.
That was kind of more like a realistic
movie. But I think Birds of Prey. We might see it, but Birds of...
I might. I mean, I'd probably have to see Suicide Squad first, just so I'm not completely...
Don't put us through that.
But, well, yeah, like I said, it's just not really something that looked all that interesting.
Doesn't look interesting, but I think that's going to be another Charlie's Angels or fucking Ghostbusters 2000, what was that, 16? They bombed bad. And it's just... Superhero movies need fans.
Yeah.
Okay. And if you don't cater to the fans, you can't really push that to the mainstream. The mainstream doesn't give a shit. And that's something that for some reason these studios don't get.
Yeah. I feel like something like Birds of Prey, which is kind of like an offshoot. Yeah. So it's like, this isn't even the movie we're reviewing.
Yeah.
It's something like an offshoot. I feel like that's something that's sort of like a niche audience and you really should like cater to the niche audience. Yeah. I feel like the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I mean, that's so widespread that like everybody's going to go see that shit, whether they're into like the comic books or not. But
those suits don't realize that catering to a niche audience makes a movie authentic. And that in itself gives it the credibility to get people to go see it, to see what it was about. If it's just some generic shit, nobody gives a fuck.
Yeah, because if you try to make a movie that like everyone will like, then no one's going to like it.
Yeah.
That's just kind of, you can't please everybody. If you try to please everybody, you please nobody. That's just how it works.
Inauthentic, generic, fucking vanilla fucking movie, you know?
Because so much has to be.
Joker proved that. If you call me a liar, Joker proved that.
Yeah.
They fucking did something special. Everybody went to go see that.
Yeah, that's made like all the money in the world. But so the rhythm section, like I said, it's in a way, it's kind of a shame that it's bombing so hard because it's really not, like I said, it's not bad. A masterpiece or anything, but it was like perfectly watchable. It was like a slow start, but it's like after 10 or 15 minutes, like I really kind of got into it and I got interested in seeing where it was going to go and
it's
shit like that. So
not counting James Bond, this has been that's the best spy one I've seen
this
in a long time.
You know what this one reminded me a little bit too was, remember when we went and saw Girl in the Spider's Web?
Yeah.
That's kind of a little bit along those kind of lines, too.
Yeah,
maybe.
And that wasn't bad, but you'll never see another one of those.
Yeah, you probably won't. Well, like I said, the guy that wrote the original books died, so it's not like he's going to... But yeah, so if you're into, like I said, if you want to see like kind of a grittier version of James Bond or something kind of like La Femme Nikita, if you like spy thrillers or something like that, you might dig it. So, you know, go check it out.
Yeah.